So just like NFL draft grades, I don't want to look too much at actual strength of schedule around the NFL because it's, you know, we're looking at basically records from last season. Now, if you want to look at projected win totals and then get your strength of schedule that way, like Sharp Football Analysis does, that's a different story. I think that's one of the directions you could go where you feel a little bit better about it. But, you know, listen, as it's come out now, we've really haven't had much time to digest too much, but there's only so much that we could do with the Commander's schedule. We know the front end is really, really tough. As the schedule was coming out, I got to look at it with Jordan DeJani of CBS Sports. Jordan DeJani jumps on with me now, CBS Sports, but I will bring this up. You are in Nashville, and the Commanders do play at the Titans Week 13, so maybe that's going to be the easy game for the Commanders there, Jordan.
Hey, wow, right off the bat, Nick. What's going on, man? How we doing? Thanks so much for having me on the show. Yeah, you know, I mean, the Commanders and Titans are two of the more intriguing teams, I feel like, heading into this season. The Titans, of course, have not set the world on fire by any means over the past couple seasons, but they've got a prospective franchise quarterback and Cam Ward. They've got an intriguing new head coach in Robert Saleh. They've done a lot of work in free agency in the draft to surround him and new offensive coordinator Brian Daboll with some familiarity. So we'll see. We'll see what happens when we get to Week 13.
What do you expect from Cam Ward this year? He's going to be on quarterback. Jaden Daniels is going to be on quarterback on Netflix too, but beyond them actually being on a reality show, there's real football that has to be played too.
Yeah, you know what's so funny is I got the notification, I guess it was yesterday, like, oh, the quarterback series with Netflix is back. And I was like, man, I really don't care about this show. I didn't even finish last season, whatever. And then I saw Cam Ward was going to be on it, and I said, okay, well, now you've got my attention. And, you know, when you're looking at the quarterbacks that are going to be featured in this season of the documentary, I would guess that your average fan base really doesn't care about Cam Ward. Sure, he was a number one overall pick, but he wasn't viewed as this generational prospect, and the Tennessee Titans are a team that really no one cares about. With that being said, Cam Ward, he has this elite work ethic, maybe more so than any quarterback in the NFL. He eats, breathes, sleeps football, and I'm excited to see how that comes across to different fan bases and other football fans that aren't really familiar with Cam Ward. So we'll see how that goes. But in terms of expectations, it's funny because we knew the Titans were going to be a bad team last year. They had the number one overall pick. They had a lame duck head coach in Brian Callahan, who we all knew was going to be fired. And looking at Cam Ward's performance, man, through the first half of the season, I was definitely unimpressed. I think he had 5 total touchdowns and 11 turnovers in his first 9 starts, but then he started to turn it around. I think he had 12 touchdowns and just 3 turnovers in his final 8 starts, and he started seeing some of the potential that this young kid has. The game slowed down for him a bit, even though he was operating behind one of the worst lines in the NFL. You saw the arm talent on display too. He was operating with a lackluster weaponry, I would put it. So now that that's been upgraded, the stage is set for him to have a sophomore breakout.
When you look at the schedules being released now, and besides the obvious where it's fun and seeing what creative social media stuff's going to be out there, especially the Titans. The Titans set the bar years ago at 2023 when they did the, you know, people trying to figure out what the team logos were and all that. I mean, that set the bar that's there. But from an actual football standpoint, like, here's where I am, Jordan. I look at this and go, I can't play the win-loss game, but I can tell if a schedule's tough, right? I look at quarterback matchups and things like that, but it's almost like after you finish the draft and everybody's got draft grades, we want to give them out, but in reality, we got to see what guys are going to do on the field, so it's tough to judge in that moment. How much judgment of a schedule do you have in the moment when it actually comes out?
Yeah, listen, Nick, I'm the most excitable kid in the world when it comes to the NFL, but I don't get too excited about the schedule release. Like, you could text me any day of the offseason and be like, hey, the schedule is out, and I won't even rush to the computer to pull it up. I mean, we got months and months to go over the new slate and dissect it from week 1 to week 18, but here's the thing. The NFL has found out that there's an audience for this sort of thing, so they're going to turn it into a grand production with the bells and the whistles and the leaks and the international games. Like, cool, brother, but it doesn't exactly scratch the itch in my soul that is missing football. With that being said, I mean, you look at these teams and you try to judge if they're going to be improved or if they're regressing, depending on what happened in free agency and the draft. So I'm actually working on a project right now. I don't know if it's going to come to fruition, but basically what I've done is I went to DraftKings and I wrote down every single NFL team's odds of making the playoffs. Mm-hmm. And now that the schedule is coming out, what I'm going to do is sit down tomorrow morning and see how those odds have adjusted adjusted to see which teams got better odds of making the playoffs or got worse odds of making the playoffs based on what the schedule is. So I'm with you on paper. It's kind of fun to break down with your team's wins and losses. But again, there's a lot of time between now and week one of the year.
I love that idea, actually. I'll be really interested to see. If you put that out, I hope you do that, because I would really love to see how much of a difference there was in those. You know, we got a ton of international games, too, Jordan, and we know what the NFL is trying to do. And I think it's smart. You're expanding the game worldwide because it's not just the NFL you're trying to expand, but it's the entire sport of American football that you want to now showcase around the world. Are you a fan of this many international games? Do you want to see more? Because I'll tell you this, I think at some point we're just going to have like a game in every time zone, it feels like, at some point.
Yeah, I mean, no, I'm not a fan of it, but I mean, it doesn't matter what I think. The NFL is trying to take over the world. In fact, sources tell me that when we get the technology back of getting back to the moon, that's where the NFL wants to open up the season in 2040, right? They are trying to take over the world, and the international games are not for the fans in the States. I mean, no one's going to wake up at 8:30 a.m. Central Time. I'm in Central Time. Imagine how tough it is for me to watch the Patriots and Steelers or whoever play in Dublin. But it's about expanding the global footprint of the NFL. Now, what I'm really curious about is, what does the NFL do with it? I don't think that they're just trying to take money from different parts of the world, but I think what they're trying to do is maybe set the stage for some kind of international expansion. I don't know what that looks like. I don't know if they want to start a league or move a couple of teams overseas, or maybe they buy into the UFL and place them over in Europe and start a farm system with financial backing. Who knows? But I think that's an interesting part of the conversation is, cool, the international games have been successful from an international perspective, but what comes next?
And that's, I mean, yeah, I think, you know, you bring up a great point, because it's obvious they're trying to expand. It's obvious they're trying to, you know, have the game become popular all around the world. But it's like, what do you do with that next? To me, I feel like this is a setup for some sort of like NFL Europe again. It didn't work long term the first time, but I just feel like the world wasn't ready for it. Now we're in a spot where they have expanded it more. I don't know. Here's my big thing, Jordan. I would love for the NFL to have some sort of minor league system, just to give players, especially quarterbacks, more time to develop, where, you know, that helps the league down the road if you have player development that's beyond just practice squads. I mean, I don't know, maybe it's something like that. Could you see the NFL ever trying to develop an actual minor league system beyond the UFL or whatever they're doing right now with that?
So a couple years ago, I theorized that if the UFL could prove it could stand alone and operate adequately financially, the NFL would then throw its weight behind them and adopt them as a farm system with new financial backing. And then who knows, like I theorized, maybe they could go overseas. But that was kind of my main point, was what if the NFL could get behind a spring league or just a minor league team or minor league in general. But the other part about the argument or the discussion is that, does the NFL necessarily need it? Like, are they craving some kind of developmental league right now? Because I would argue they don't have to do that. I think they're fine the way they're set up now. There's a lot of talent to go around, but is there enough talent to have an entire farm league that NFL teams can pull into?
I would love to see something like that. Talking to Jordan Dejani here on Team 980, you know, we now have kind of this like quiet point in the NFL season. You're not going to be hearing too many rumors. It's more about just like where A.J. Brown's going to go and where Brandon Ayuk's going to go. How do you see kind of the rest of the NFL offseason shaping up in terms of, is it just going to be basically a Brandon Ayuk saga that's drawn out forever? A.J. Brown gets traded quickly. Like, what are some of the next things that you could see happening? Because I feel like it's kind of a very open case right now.
Yeah, I'm keeping an eye on Stephon Diggs, you know, some of the top free agents, where potentially could he land now that, you know, the court stuff is kind of behind him, with the Washington Commanders potentially be a match. I'm also keeping an eye on some extensions. I mean, let's talk about the running back market for a second. Two of the best running backs, if not the top two running backs in the NFL, are looking for extensions that could put them over Saquon Barkley as the highest paid running back. And that's Jahmyr Gibbs of the Detroit Lions and then Bijan Robinson of the Atlanta Falcons. Which one of those guys gets to the negotiating table first, and how hard does that make life on the other party who does not sign their individual? So that's something I'm keeping an eye on too.
The AFC next year. So I look more and more at the AFC, and I just see an absolute gauntlet for I mean, literally could be 10 potential playoff teams next year. When you look at the AFC, I feel like the Pittsburgh Steelers might be a team that has a fall off, mainly because, I mean, who knows what Aaron Rodgers is going to do. We're still waiting to see what happens with that. I mean, the Ravens, are they back in the playoffs? Are the Bengals healthy so they can get back in the playoffs? Where are the Chiefs after the season they had last year? It to me, Jordan, just feels like the AFC is as loaded as it's been, not to mention the defenses you've got at the top of the Broncos and Patriots. Bo Nix has to get healthy. I get that. But, you know, the Patriots have improved this offseason. I don't know, man. I look at this AFC and go, it is going to be really, really tough for even good teams to make the playoffs on the back end there.
Yeah, I would agree with that. I guess if you're asking me for a couple of regression candidates, one that jumps off the page immediately has to be the New England Patriots. I mean, they played the easiest strength of schedule since the turn of the millennium. They're not going 14-3 once again. And while I do love Drake May and I love this defense, you also have to wonder how much the Mike Vrabel drama is going to affect this team. And there's probably some people out there listening right now that scoff when I bring that up. But Mike Vrabel is kind of this alpha male that is very smart and does no wrong. And now that this entire situation has come to light, you just have to wonder, you know, how he's looked upon by his players and in the building. You know, I think that's a very fair point. But I would also bring up the Pittsburgh Steelers, just like you did. Mike McCarthy is coming in. He's not exactly the head coaching candidate I think that fan base wanted in Pittsburgh. You know, it seemed like they were long overdue for a reset to bring in a younger coach with new ideas and a new quarterback who is younger and more athletic. Instead, it seems like they're stuck with Mike McCarthy and Aaron Rodgers. So it's tough to imagine the Steelers making the playoffs again. I'll bring up the Baltimore Ravens, man. I mean, they have a new head coach, and it's not like new head coaches come in, first-time head coaches, and find immediate success. I understand you have Lamar Jackson, but he's dealt with some injuries over the past couple seasons. So can he be Superman and take the Ravens to the playoffs? And finally, I'll talk about the AFC South real quick. I find them super intriguing. The Jacksonville Jaguars were a surprising team last year. No one saw them going 13-4. No one saw Trevor Lawrence being an MVP finalist, but there he was. Is that a team that's going to keep on that trajectory, or are they poised to take a step backwards? Same thing with the Houston Texans. I like that Texans defense better than I like the Seahawks defense last year, but C.J. Stroud is not playing good ball, so what exactly is the story going to look like for him? And how about the Indianapolis Colts? We thought they were going to win the Super Bowl through the first half of the regular season last year, so what's going to happen with Daniel Jones? Is he really this new brand Indiana Jones that's going to take the Colts to the promised land now that Alec Pierce is locked up long-term with Jonathan Taylor? Or are they going to take a step backwards? So, yeah, that's my grand landscape of the AFC.
And it's true, though, because we were talking about this earlier. I mean, the Commanders are also going to see the Texans week 14, and it's like, okay, what does that Texans team look like? We know how great the defense is, but what does C.J. Stroud look like as a quarterback? So, yeah, I think, listen, there's a ton of questions around the AFC. On the NFC side of things, listen, the Commanders are a team that won 5 games last year. They did a lot this offseason. I like their draft. I'm so glad Sonny Styles fell to them at 7. You're on the outside. You're not obviously in this. You cover the entire NFL. You see all these teams. I'd love to know a perspective from somebody like you that sees the Commanders from the outside, from their offseason to their draft to where they are now. What do you see in them?
Yeah, it's tough. I feel like I'm not as optimistic on Washington. The Philadelphia Eagles are a really interesting story we could spend hours on, because that could be a team that gets back to the Super Bowl, or they could fall flat on their face and finish third in the division. I think either possibility is possible. The Dallas Cowboys, if that defense is improved, that's a team that could be top two in the NFC East too. But looking at the Washington Commanders, there's two main bullet points I have for them getting back to contention, if you will. Number one is obvious, right? Jaden Daniels has to remain healthy. When he was a prospect coming out in the draft, I actually found it kind of tough to fall in love with him, because I was 100% sure he was going to leave his first NFL game via ambulance in Tampa Bay, just the way why he plays. But I was wrong, right? He was Superman, and he got them to the NFC Championship game as a rookie. And I said, wow, maybe I'm wrong. He is LeBron James of this league. But then year two happens. He misses more games than he plays in. So what does the future look like for Jaden Daniels? But on top of that, you know, I think that's something that from a national perspective – not a lot of people are talking about, but was this Commanders defense. It ranked worst in the league last year. Even if we were playing a Madden video game and we were able to turn off injuries with Jaden Daniels, I don't think he could have taken his team to the NFC Championship game with the way the defense was performing. So the question is, did Washington do enough in the offseason to get better, to get back to contention? You get Odafe Owe and Chase in that pass rusher. Those guys could be hit or miss. I'm kind of curious about the secondary. You got Trey Amos, Amik Robertson, Mikey Sainristrill. You brought in Maryland legend Nick Cross, and then Quan Martin is at safety too. Is that secondary good enough on paper to keep up with some of the weapons that the Philadelphia Eagles and Dallas Cowboys have at their disposal?
And those are the same questions that everybody's asking here in D.C., and they're not going to be answered for a while, but there's certainly hope it's not another 5-win season, because, God, suffering through that was just after 12 wins. Just brutal. I mean, it's so deflating to watch what the expectations were to what they became that year. So at least just split the difference. Let's get to, like, 8 wins. Get over the win total to 7.5, and then I think that's at least feels like there's improvement there. Jordan DeJani, CBS Sports. Love talking to you, buddy. Great to talk to you again.
Absolutely. Let's do it soon, man. Thanks.
Oh, man. And you know, listen, every question he brought up about the Commanders, that shows you, right? It's not just us around here asking these questions. It's everybody. There are a lot of questions, specifically the defense. And then, to me, it's the defense as a whole, and it's Jaden Daniels staying healthy. We know what Jaden Daniels can do as a quarterback. It's just a matter of, can he stay out there on the field consistently enough to be able to do it? You're always going to deal with some level of injuries in the NFL. Every team does. But you want to mitigate that risk as much as possible. And, you know, when it comes to your quarterback, protecting him is key. But you also don't want to take away that ability to run, because it is a weapon that he has. Just got to do it smartly. It's tough. There's that balance there that, I mean, teams have always struggled trying to figure this out with quarterbacks, right? Quarterbacks that are mobile, quarterbacks that can run, quarterbacks that can use their legs. Great, but how do you do it safely? And it's hard, especially in that moment. So I'm Nick Ashew. We know that culture matters in sports, all right? You got to have good culture. You got to have an organization top to bottom where people buy in. They're part of the same goals. They have the same ideas, all those things. We also know, especially in D.C., what happens when you don't have good culture within an organization. Ask the Dan Snyder era Redskins and football team. Well, it seems like there's a lack of culture that the Bucs had this past season under Doc Rivers. This is rare that something specific like this happens, okay? So Miles Turner, who was, you know, with the Pacers for a decade, went to the finals with them last year, left in free agency, signed with the Bucks. The Bucks did the whole, you know, wave Dame Lillard and stretch provision, and, you know, it didn't work with Dame. He was hurt, tore his Achilles, and they were like, well, Miles Turner's the guy that might make Giannis want to stay here, right? There's a guy that shows we're committed to winning. Well, not so much. So Miles Turner went on the Game Recognized Game podcast with Breonna Stewart, because everybody has podcasts now, and detailed a complete breakdown of the discipline, or lack thereof in this case, under Doc Rivers with the Bucks this past season. Remember, Miles Turner, first year with the Bucks, just went to the finals with the Pacers, Eastern Conference Finals the year before. And this is what he saw. He said, quote, Rivers didn't find anybody ever. Guys were apparently showing up late to film, missing meetings, arriving an hour late to even the plane. Can you imagine? You're told to show up at 9 a.m. for a flight, and at 10 a.m., Giannis is still waiting to show up to the flight. They're not going to leave without him. They're just going to stay there. So the worst part about all of this is it's not even just the fact that, you know, Miles Turner came out and said that Doc Rivers didn't find anybody. People were showing up late. It was basically just guys doing whatever they wanted, which makes sense considering what we saw on the court. It's the fact that Miles Turner called out Giannis Antetokounmpo, the franchise in Milwaukee, the guy that brought him a championship, the greatest player the organization's ever seen. Yes, I'll even put him over Lou Alcindor, okay? And Miles Turner literally said, Giannis is going to show up whenever he wants, really. Quote, I knew not to show up until an hour after they said the plane was taking off. If you ever wanted a sign that Giannis is out in Milwaukee, if you hadn't already gotten those signs with the fight at the end of the year about he wanted to play and they didn't want him to play and we all knew they were tanking, and not to mention what was going on during the season and everything. It's been nothing but drama. There's your sign. The fact that Miles Turner called out Giannis by name tells you he knows he ain't coming back and he's not going to be there. And it makes sense, right? This Bucks team went 32-50 They'd made the playoffs 9 straight years. Doc Rivers was fired at the end of the regular season, and they've already brought in a new head coach. Giannis is done in Milwaukee. Where he goes, a lot of questions, a lot of opportunities. Now there's Minnesota that's getting thrown around now because they just got knocked out of the playoffs. I have certainly heard that Orlando is very much going to be in on Giannis. You could throw in probably other teams that are going to be in this mix too, like the Heat and maybe the Warriors. The Warriors try to get him at the deadline. There's going to be a lot. It's going to be a Giannis sweepstakes. We all know this is it. You have an owner that came out that basically said, I want this done by the draft, which makes sense for the Bucks because you're better off getting a first-round pick in this draft than future picks and, you know, go here. Make this happen now. But it's very rare that a guy comes into an organization. And listen, Miles Turner's a good player, but he's no Giannis, all right? Especially with what Giannis means to the organization there. The fact that you have somebody come into an organization and basically look around like Ron Burgundy in the bear cage and go, I immediately regret this decision, which is clearly what the case was. He's like looking around going, dude, what did I get myself into? Now, granted, he got paid. He got, what, $100 million, whatever it was, so he's fine. But this just shows when you have somebody come from another organization and then compare the culture and how things were done there to just be completely shocked with the circus that was run under Doc Rivers, who clearly didn't even want to be there as a head coach, just took the check, right? He's the boss that's just like there to collect the check, and that's really all that it is. You don't really want the responsibility, don't really care. It's like, I don't really care what happens to you guys. I want the check, and then when it's done, and I'll get paid. That's exactly what it is. We've all had bosses like that, right? You know, and you get to a point where you just realize, oh, this ain't getting any better. So Miles Turner just says, fine, I just won't show up until an hour late for the plane. Now, who cares? That's a disaster. And that's why culture is so important, right? Attitude reflects leadership. I love that quote. Love it, because it's so true. Everywhere you look, it is so true. Attitude reflects leadership, and the leadership clearly was, look, Doc Rivers has always been known as a player's coach, but this is beyond normal. I mean, this is just you don't care. You know this thing's melting down. You know Giannis doesn't want to be there. You know they're not winning games. They're not making the playoffs. It's an utter S show, and Doc Rivers, I'm just going to ride this. I can't do it, Doc Rivers. I tried.
Did you see the clip, like, documentary thing, like movie thing they made?
No, what?
About the old Clippers owner that got fired or whatever. But Doc Rivers is portrayed in it a lot because he was the coach of the Clippers at the time.
Are you talking the TV show with Lawrence Fishburne?
Was it Lawrence Fishburne?
They did a show about it.
Yeah, it was like a show. I don't know, it was on Hulu or something. I saw it on vacation once.
Yes,
I don't remember.
Yes, I don't remember what it was called, but it was a show.
Clipped, I remember.
It was terrible.
It was terrible. Al Bundy was playing the owner.
Yes, it was so bad. It was so bad.
But I remember a bad show. Doc Rivers also was not portrayed as running the team well as the coach or whatever on that as well. So I don't know. Maybe the portrayal was right. I don't know.
Look, as Doc Rivers probably got older, and look, he wasn't planning on coaching the Bucks. I mean, they offered him a deal when they fired Adrian Griffin, and that was because he had stuff going on off the court there. And, I mean, it was bad under Adrian Griffin. Even though they were winning games, it was stuff that went on. There's a reason why he's not coaching anymore. But, you know, when you look at the way this went, Doc Rivers was like an advisor to the team, and then they just kind of brought him in. We're like, you're the coach now. Like, okay. So he looked and just decided to take a check. I mean, that's really what it came down to. He's always been known as a player's coach. He's always been known as that guy that, you know, kind of lets players do what they want. It works if you're winning, but you're not winning, it's a mess. Now, look, early in his career, he was a great coach. What he did with that Magic team, that when he won Coach of the Year with the Magic, I mean, that was a team that was looked at as like the worst team in the NBA. He used to get the most out of his players. And yeah, he won a title in Boston, and they had some really good teams and some good years. But, you know, as time goes on, some people either are really hungry for it and want to keep going, or they live off their name and they live off their past. And Doc Rivers lived off his past mostly. He got enough out of teams, right? He got them to the playoffs, but they're blowing 3-1 leads. They're undisciplined. Clearly, you can see it. Like, this is the culture that he allowed to happen. It was a bad combination together, and this is a complete blow up of the Bucks, and this is what they should be doing. Now, what it looks like moving forward, you know, are you going to do it the right way, or are you going to do it the sloppy way? If I'm the Bucks, I'm getting as many picks as I can, and I'm starting completely from scratch. But you got to be able to draft well too, right? Don't drag this out. You see this often. Teams drag it on way too long with their star, and there's a certain point where you have to look in the mirror, or in this case, look at each other and say, yeah, this has run its course. We need to go separate ways, and we'll reconvene at the end when we retire your number. I mean, Bradley Beal was with the Wizards far too long. They should have traded him 2 years earlier. They could have gotten way more in return. Now, they've made up for that, and this front office now has done everything they can to build this team up. You got the number one pick. It's a great spot. So, again, that's all in the past, and it doesn't mean Bradley Beal wasn't great for the organization, great for the city, great player. Just too long. When a team is sitting and spinning your tires in the mud of NBA purgatory, and you're not going anywhere, and every year it's play for the 8 seed or play for the play-in tournament, there's a certain point where you just look and say, we are done. We have to understand that. And the Bucks dragged this thing on way too long. But it is hard. You have to understand from these organizations, it's really hard to move on from star players when you don't always have star players there. It's one thing for the Lakers. They go out and go star hunting, and they'll figure it out and bring some, right? They got Luka already there with the Lakers, so they can move on from LeBron, and they have Luka. The Knicks went and traded, and the Knicks bought a title contender. They bought a contender. They can go to the finals with a team that's completely free agency and trades. Most teams now are doing it through the draft. But it's hard for teams like the Bucks to move on from a generational talent like Giannis, just like it's going to be hard for the Nuggets to do the same with Jokic. But if that team loses in the first round again next year, Jokic may want out in Denver, and it's going to be the same situation. But it's really hard because, remember, the Nuggets had a lot of really, really bad years. I know they had some great years with Carmelo Anthony and add Allen Iverson in the mix there, and it was fun for a short time. But really, the Nuggets have been a team that loses a lot. And it's hard for any organization to say, okay, we're done with this guy that's done so much for our organization. But you also have to look at what the future is. What are you going to build from this? Can you rebuild the future, or are you going to sit there just trying to plug and play anybody you can and hope that that team's going to be good enough for the play-in? And that just sucks for fans. So we'll see. Giannis is going to be gone. It's just a question of where, and it's going to probably be before the draft, so get ready. Nick Ashew on the Fan. Nick Ashew on the Fan. I'm seeing a clip circulating here now. Did ESPN accidentally run a clip of Cavs Knicks previewing the Eastern Conference Finals before it happened? I don't know if that's the case, but I'm seeing this now. ABC wants you to get hyped up for Game 1 of the Eastern Conference Finals between the Knicks and the Cavaliers. Well, Game 7 between the Cavs and Pistons is tomorrow. Listen, this stuff gets made ahead of time. Everybody's like, oh, they've got the script. It's all fake. No, this stuff gets made ahead of time, and you air the right one. If that's the case, somebody accidentally ran the wrong promo, but that's funny. I mean, but that's how that works. I love that. People are like, oh, man, the Super Bowl's predicted. Look, they've got it. It's only the NFC Championship game, and it's already got Seattle. Well, yeah, because you make promos and all this stuff. It's all done ahead of time. Same thing with the t-shirts. Guess what? There's a losing team in the Super Bowl every year that never gets t-shirts, and they send them to another country. I mean, it's like people that act like it's all staged, it's all faked. No, that's not the case. It's not it. But, you know, listen, speaking of the Seahawks, they got a lot of primetime games this year. A lot. The NFL is banking on them being a team that absolutely at least comes close to repeating. 6 primetime games. That's the most since 2000. It is going to be interesting to see. So Kenneth Walker, who's now with the Chiefs, going to return to Seattle with the Chiefs week 8. That's Sunday Night Football. I love a good storyline like that. Guy sees his former team. I'm sure they're going to give him the ball plenty. But, you know, it's interesting because Seattle lost a lot this offseason, right? You lose a bunch on defense. You lose your MVP, your Super Bowl MVP in Kenneth Walker. And I think this is an underrated thing for Seattle. They're losing their offensive coordinator, Clint Kubiak, who took the head coaching job with the Raiders. Well, we know that Sam Darnold needs a good system to succeed at quarterback. Didn't happen with the Jets. Didn't happen with Carolina. No fault of his own. Those are both just trash organizations for the most part. Carolina's gotten a little better, but there's nothing special there. And, you know, he went to Minnesota after some time in San Francisco as a backup. Learned, got better, went to Minnesota. We know he succeeded until the last couple of games of his career there in Minnesota. Goes on, plays in Seattle, and wins the Super Bowl. But what's that look like with Sam Darnold no longer having Clint Kubiak as his head coach or as his offensive coordinator? Might be fine. You know, you keep similar system and it still works and you're good, but it might not. It's a lot of questions. We know so very little about the NFL this time of year. We still do in terms of next year, but, you know, that's a lot. It's a lot of primetime games for them. And that's really what makes the schedule release more interesting. It's not trying to play the win-loss game, but it's more of when teams play who and the types of matchups you have. Like, we're going to have our first Drake May against the Chiefs and Patrick Mahomes matchup, right? Like, what the NFL is going to really need to do is start promoting a lot of its other young quarterbacks. We're seeing that with Jaden Daniels. 5 standalone games for the Commanders again this year, so they're going to have an opportunity again to show that last year hopefully was a fluke. That's the goal anyway. But you're going to need to start seeing, you know, if you're the NFL, you want Drake May to get that spotlight the way Jaden Daniels is. You want more of Caleb Williams in the spotlight with the Bears, especially after last season. Although Caleb Williams still has a lot of questions. He's still wildly inaccurate. Some of it's the way he plays. Some of it's Ben Johnson's going to need to coach him up a little bit more heading into year two of that offense. But, you know, this is now what the NFL needs to do. I'd argue that even somebody like a Bo Nix, who's he's got to get healthy, just had a second ankle surgery, but that Broncos team is really good. They didn't do much this offseason until they traded for Jalen Waddle, but that's now added to that offense. And if Bo Nix is healthy and plays the way he did last year, you see some improvement. I mean, they promoted Davis Webb to offensive coordinator. He's going to call the plays. I mean, Davis Webb as their offensive coordinator, very similar to David Blau for the Commanders, right? Young, former quarterback, a lot of hype around them as a play caller, as an innovator, right? We get younger and younger with these coordinators. It's the tech bro industry. Yeah, you just get them as young as possible. 29, 30-year-old offensive coordinator. We want new minds, new ideas. We want all this. Defensive coordinators, it's the opposite. You want the grizzled vet, like a pilot. I want them to have seen it all. I'm not scared of this turbulence. We're gonna blitz the hell out of them. Damn it, I've seen this before. We're fine. That's my defensive coordinator I want right there. Even though the Commanders have a rookie defensive coordinator. Doesn't mean it won't work. I'm just saying that's if you look around the league, you see a lot of success with that. But again, the only way you do that is having that experience. The international games are, I mean, there's going to be more. You ready? Because we're going to probably see more and more over the years. They got 9 this year. You're going to add Melbourne for the first time, Paris, Rio. I mean, this is, the NFL is trying to take over the world. And it is doing its job. I mean, they're going to play in every time zone when this is all done. They start playing on the moon, right? Like Jordan DeJani said.
That'd
at some
awesome.
Point, they're going to be on the moon. On the moon?
Yeah.
Imagine them just like bouncing around just slowly playing just like moon ball. We'll call it moon ball. There you go. We got moon ball. And it'll be a whole new game. It'll be played with robots, and all the billionaires will set it up.
No, we'll still call it football, even though it doesn't really use feet. Because that's what we do.
Well, that's true. You're right. I guess it still would be. Moonball's got a nice ring to it, though. But you could have, like, all the big tech companies, and they'll just have their own teams, and that's what we'll watch. It'll be...
We could call it Sunball, just to mess with everybody.
You know what? You're right. That would make more sense, because it has to be the opposite. So we'll call it Sunball instead of Moonball, because it's football, but they don't use their feet except for the kickers. I like this. I could work with this. Yeah. And you're going to have Meta versus, you know, X... And you're going to have OpenAI, like all the big tech companies. They're all just going to throw their money around and have robot football on the moon and call it Sunball. Nothing makes sense anymore. This is the world we live in. But, yeah, I mean, the NFL is going to make sure that they, again, they'll probably have games on Tuesdays at some point. Just figure it out, right? 18 games, 2 byes, and you come back from your bye and you play on a Tuesday. They'll figure it out. And then players will still sit there trying to fight for guaranteed contracts, and they won't dig in, and the NFL is going to get their way. I mean, Tom Brady called him out in the last CBA. He's like, we are stupid. The owners got everything they wanted. Players won't dig in. So there's going to be 18 games. There's going to be games every day of the week. And there's going to be more international. And players and coaches are going to hate it, but the NFL doesn't care. These owners don't care. Little do these players realize that you guys are the ones that actually control it, because these owners don't make any money if you don't play football. But you got to save your money now and be able to say, we're not going to play football for a season and hit these guys where it hurts. That's the only way. But it's not going to happen. Moonball is more likely. Sunball more likely to happen. Nick Ashew on the fan. God, Kyle Schwarber's got 20 home runs now. 2 home runs in the Phillies win yesterday. Man, I know it was a short stint. Kyle Schwarber in D.C. was fun, wasn't it? I miss great baseball in D.C. Although the Nats are, it feels like the arrow is going up now at this point. It's just we've had a rebuild off of the rebuild. It feels like it's gone on forever since they won that World Series in 2019. It's been so long. And you look at the rebuilds in this city, the Wizards, you see the next step coming. It's here. The basketball gods gave them that luck that they needed. The Commanders, in theory, the hope is it's going to be a lot better than a 5-win season from last year. But the Nats are in this like weird spot where it's just like you're trying to start an engine in the cold and it's not quite starting and there's a minute and then it sputters back out. And you're like, and you're just trying. It's just so close. Really. I mean, I just want to see great baseball in D.C. again. Not average baseball, though. Hot dog night looked good last night. I saw a lot of people stuffing their faces. Did you see this metal, Chris, by the way? They have, like, hot dog fries at Nats Park.
No, that sounds amazing, though.
They're like curly fries, but they're hot dogs.
That's amazing.
I've never seen that. Baseball, whether it's minor league, major league, the food is just incredible. I mean, again, it's all right. Terrible for you, and it's just going to, you know, just... tear you up or you're going to spend the next day on the toilet, but it's worth it. It's most of the time it's worth it if you just want something that's really ridiculous. But I'm trying to like picture what it would be like, because you look at them and you just see fries and they're like kind of curly, wavy, and I'm just trying to like, they give you like a ranch dipping sauce. First off, just go ketchup, because ketchup belongs on hot dogs.
Yeah, ranch on hot dogs sounds weird.
Yeah.
I'm not a big ranch or mayo fan. I'm just, meh.
Not on anything?
Not really. They're just too, like, I want flavor, dude.
Ooh.
Like, I'm putting sauce on stuff. I want it to, like, taste like something.
So ranch and no, ranch is no flavor to you.
No. Right? I'm a blue cheese always when we're doing wings.
Are you? See, oh, I'm both. I'm both, because it depends on which type of wings. Like, if it's just buffalo, blue cheese, but I'll mix some ranch in there.
I'll tell you this, if the wings are good enough, you don't even need a dipping
fair.
Sauce. So, like, that's the
fair.
Real, you know.
Yes, that is true. But see, here's the thing. Here's one thing about me. I do love sauces. Like, for someone that cares about what he eats, sauces are a problem for me.
Yeah.
I like a good sauce on various things. That's what makes wings so great, because you can get, like, four different flavors, five. I mean, it depends on how many you're getting. You're right. If the wings are good enough, I don't need anything else with them. Or I might be like, okay, this first bite is going to be just the wings with sauce, right? Whatever the sauce is, like a Parmesan garlic. And then there's a little regular chicken exposed. So then I can mix it with a little ranch or blue cheese, and then with the flavor, and you go a little back and forth. I want a little bit of everything. I'm hungry now.
Yeah, me too. I have not had a lunch break yet. So
40 minutes to go, and I'm hungry. I got some jerky sitting next to me, but that's as far as it's going. I want to get some damn wings. But yeah, I can understand how people can eat wings without anything, but it's got to have a sauce, though. It can't just be a dry rub. Then I definitely need a blue cheese or a ranch or something. Can you do a dry rub without any sauce?
Again, if they're good enough,
okay,
it's possible.
All right.
But there's not a ton that are, like, you know, just a dry, like, that's pretty rare air.
There is a place by us in Annapolis that has really good Old Bay wings, because it's not just a dry rub.
Old Bay wings. Yeah.
Yeah, it's not just a dry rub. It's like a, but it's not a sauce. It's just, it's just kind of oily. So I don't know if it's just butter. I can't really remember if it's like a butter, more of like a, anyway. And again, I'm sure it's terrible for you, but it doesn't matter. It tastes really good. I don't really like wings necessarily all that dry, but if they're crispy enough, I could do it. God, I'm hungry. This is your fault. This is your fault, Metal
Me?
Chris. You, yes.
I don't want to start talking about corkscrew hot dogs or
That's
whatever.
That's fair. Did you look them up, by the way? It sounds
no,
like you looked
I haven't
them up.
Yet. No, I'm working.
All right. What do you mean you're working? We're talking about food and you're working. This doesn't count. None of this counts.
I mean, I'm getting paid for this. You better believe.
No, they do look good, though. I'm a big fan of, like, the crazy, you know, remember when they had the Strasburger and it was for, like, five people or whatever it was? It was just a monster. I mean, that was a big thing. And you know, that, I mean,
I was in St. Louis once out there, and I got one of the hamburgers with the Krispy Kreme bun.
Did you really?
That's where they were invented, was at the baseball park out in St. Louis, yeah.
How was it?
It was pretty amazing. I got to see Mark McGwire hit a home run. It was awesome. It was back in the day.
Yeah. No, I'm just so, I mean, it was two Krispy Kreme donuts with the burger in the middle. Like,
yep.
I feel like, again, a bite of it I could do, and then I'd just get disgusted if I ate any more.
It was cool eating, like, one. I don't know that, like, if I had season tickets to the Cardinals, which I did not, but, like, that I would get them every time I went. You know what I mean?
I would hope not.
It was a cool novelty. I don't know. It was,
if you're eating one of those every game, you're in trouble.
Well, you know what I'm saying. Like,
I know what you mean. But, yeah, I mean, it's, I mean, that's now just kind of part of the gimmick, right? I don't even say gimmick. Part of the appeal. You go to a baseball game and you may want to try one of their crazy ass foods that they throw out there, and I think it's you know, minor league baseball has the crazier things where they change their team name for a game, and then it's whatever. I mean, again, I'd say the Savannah Bananas, but they moved on past minor league baseball, obviously. They're a freaking juggernaut, but that's how they started. It's the same idea. It's just branching out. People like originality. They like a little crazy, whether it's food or otherwise, and then you put it on social media and then it becomes a whole thing, and you know, go from there. But yeah, I will say this though: hot dogs, ketchup, and mustard all the way through. Give me all the stuff on a hot dog. None of this whole plain hot dog nonsense.
So I'm not big on the ketchup. So you can't usually do this at like a park because you can't bring your own stuff. But I have become a swap out ketchup for sriracha.
I can get on board with that. Big sriracha.
Yeah,
guy here.
Like I
sriracha
said,
on my
like
eggs.
Flavor, man. I want stuff to taste like something. Like,
the problem is you can build up a tolerance to sriracha, so that just means you're using more and more, and then like it might not be as spicy, but then it can tear
like,
your stomach
up. Lay off for
up.
A little while.
Oh, man. I eat sriracha every I always put it on eggs. Sriracha on eggs, man. That is the way to go. That's my go-to hot sauce is sriracha. None of the other stuff. So, no, I'm with you. Replacing it with that is Because you do have flavor. Oh, my God. I'm literally, my mouth is watering thinking about all this food. Good God. All right. We got another hour coming up, or half an hour, whatever it is. 980 goes away, though. Bye-bye now. Nick Ashew on the Fan. We're less than a week past the point where we found out the Wizards were going to get the number one overall pick. Still a little bit of a celebration. Still a little bit of a high, you know. All that young, up-and-coming talent and building around it and saying, well, if you could just get that number one pick in the 2026 NBA draft. And here we are. Chase Hughes, Monumental Sports, jumps on with me now. Nick Ashew on the Team 980. I guess now, I know you've already been out there, you've watched workouts, Chase, you've seen a lot, but has it kind of set in at this point, like all the leading up to, all of the hype, all of the praying that the basketball gods would let the ping pong balls fall in the Wizards' favor? Has it settled in at least at this point, like, oh, we're talking about the number one pick for this team in a really loaded draft?
I'm almost all the way there. I still kind of remind myself, wow, the Wizards won the first overall pick. And, you know, not just getting the first pick, but in this draft, it seems just so fortuitous, so lucky for them, especially at this point in their rebuild, the way it could vault them forward. And now we just got to wait and see for a consensus to form on who will be the number one pick, because right now I think it's really up in the air.
And it does definitely feel up in the air. And, you know, listen, if you look at roster construction alone, it kind of feels like A.J. DeBonsa fits more with the Wizards. Darren Peterson fits a little bit more with the Jazz at the number two pick. I know there's workouts still in interviews. There's so much more to go with at this point. But, you know, just from you and just seeing these two players, seeing the roster, seeing where they fit, do you have a gut? Do you have just sort of a maybe if you were drafting the direction you would go? I know there's a lot of moving parts, but there is so much hype around these two guys that I kind of feel like either way you go is like both these guys deserve to be a number one overall pick.
Yeah, I would agree. I mean, I think it's really close. I honestly think it's 50-50 at this point. At first, I thought it was DeBonsa. Obviously, he killed it at the combine, put up unbelievable measurement numbers. But the more I talk to people there, there were a lot of people who say that they think that the Wizards also like Peterson. So I think they're going to take their time to make this decision. You know, I would still give DeBonsa probably a slight edge. I mean, he's the number one pick on most mock drafts. And then you see what he did at the combine. And I always tell people through experience, like, don't make too much of vertical leap. Like, look at all the best players in the NBA nowadays. With the exception of Anthony Edwards, they don't play above the rim. They don't jump super high. Like, it's not the 80s or the 90s anymore. But when a guy is basically 6'9 without shoes and has a 42-inch vertical leap, I'm starting to think, like, how many players after LeBron and Wemby would you list as better, just like freak athletes that have gone into the draft this century? Like, I think he's in that conversation. So it's hard to imagine a team could pass on A.J. DeBonsa, but this is the year where he might not even go number one.
Which is just, yeah, I mean, it just shows the level of talent that's here. All right, so obviously that's one advantage that DeBonsa has, just the sheer athleticism alone. When you look at Darren Peterson, what's something that really stands out to you where you say, like, that would be massive for the Wizards?
His ability to be an offensive engine. I think DeBonsa can do a lot off the dribble. I think his dribble package for his size is incredible. But I think Peterson profiles as a guy that you could run your offensive round as a lead guard. I don't think it's going to happen early on. He says he's more comfortable playing point guard, that he's always played point guard, that it wasn't until he got to Kansas where Bill Self put his hand on his shoulder and said, look, buddy, you're going to play the two to help us to win. But his ability to get past people off the dribble, shoot off the dribble from three, I think that does project long-term as a guy that you could run your offense through. Like, you know, maybe if the Wizards drafted him, it's Trae Young for a couple years. And then, you know, Darren Peterson is the heir apparent. He's just going to have to develop the point guard skills to play at the NBA level, you know, protecting the ball. He's got to improve his passing vision. His passing numbers were not great at Kansas last year. So I think that would be his biggest selling point. And related to that, just the first step, the way he can get past people so easily to break down the defense and the shooting threes off the dribble, those things are really enticing when you think of what plays in the NBA nowadays.
When you look at teams, you know, and specifically the Wizards, but, you know, the Jazz are in the spot too, and I kind of look at them with the top two picks since we're talking so much to DeBonsa and Peterson here. Like, would you focus more on best player and talent, or would it be roster construction and best fit. You know what I mean? Because, like, Tabonta kind of fits a little bit more with what the Wizards have, but then there's the certain upsides that Darren Peterson has as well. Which direction would you lean if you had to weigh one of those?
Best player available 1,000 times out of 1,000. Yeah. I think you have to play that game when you're picking this high in the draft. For Exhibit A, I'll point to Dylan Harper with the San Antonio Spurs right now. Bill Simmons and all the national media, they're talking about, oh, this guy could be a superstar. He could be first-team All-NBA. Okay, well, what if the Spurs were like, you know what? We like him, but we already have De'Aaron Fox and Stephon Castle. They wouldn't look very smart right now, although there were a few decent backup plans in that particular class. But I could go on, I could give you hours of examples of it going both ways. You know, Vlade Divac just recently said that one of the reasons why they passed on Luka Doncic was because they already had a point guard in 2018. They already had De'Aaron Fox. De'Aaron Fox is an All-NBA point guard. That was a franchise-changing, catastrophic mistake. The other end of it, the Golden State Warriors, when they drafted Steph Curry, they didn't need a scoring guard. Monte Ellis, I'm sure you remember him. You're a ball knower.
Oh, yeah.
He was a really good guard, about the same size as Steph Curry. They also had Jamal Crawford. I've looked this up recently, and they overlooked that and said, you know what, why don't we take a chance on the guy from Davidson who can make threes at a really high rate? And the result was a dynasty. So, I'm not exaggerating. A lot of the biggest mistakes that have ever been made in NBA draft history, the most famous one is Sam Bowie over Michael Jordan when the Blazers thought they needed a center. It usually comes down to a team being too deferential to position over best player available.
God, I forgot Jamal Crawford was on that Warriors team, too. You're right. And I'm with you, by the way, Chase. I think best player available, especially when you're just trying to kind of build the core and figure out who's going to be there long term and who, you know, where the positions fit. I absolutely think that that's the right choice. Talking to Chase Hughes here, after one and two, Tabonta Peterson, it feels like the consensus is Cameron Boozer is going to be three, barring something crazy or a trade, going to the Grizzlies at three. Cameron Boozer's got a really high floor, high basketball IQ. I mean, he's a 20-10 guy, great passer for a big as well. I think he's got a really high ceiling in the NBA. But, you know, a lot of the conversation becomes like, well, you know, he's not as athletic. I mean, there's some of the best players in the NBA, like you kind of pointed out earlier, Chase, not that athletic. I mean, Nikola Jokic is 7 foot with a dad bod, and he's running up and down the court like it's nothing. So it's like, I don't know, to me, I feel like that's such an overrated knock against Cameron Boozer. Where are you on that?
Oh, I agree. I mean, I go back and forth on him like I think everyone does. You know, the combine results were interesting, a little shorter than I expected, but a big wingspan. And I believe he had the best shuttle run of all the top prospects. So we were, you know, anyone who's watched him, I think a lot of people have pointed out, I don't know about the lateral quickness. Well, I mean, he proved at the combine in that drill that he can move pretty well laterally. You know, I think if he's to become a star at the next level, the shooting will have to translate. He was a really good shooter in college. I mean, among the top prospects in this draft, he is the most efficient player, right? I mean, he shot well over 50% from the field, 39% from three on 4 attempts per game. That's really good for a big man. And what impresses me is that he's 253 pounds and he plays bully ball, but he's got just such soft touch around the rim. And I think that bodes really well because what I was saying is, about guys not really you know, having to have great vertical leaps and playing above the rim, you still have to score around the rim. It's very helpful if you can make threes. That's really important. And then you got to be able to get into the paint and score around the rim. And I think he's going to be able to do that without having to jump over people because he'll just, you know, bump into them and then find an angle and with a nice touch shot or a floater or a hook shot, get it in. So I think he's got a higher ceiling than people give him credit for. It's really just a product of this draft where you're talking about him going third or fourth, because I think most other years he'd be talking first or second.
Now, in terms of fourth, the Chicago Bulls, does it feel like Caleb Wilson at this point? Could you see a surprise there at all? Again, all of this is pretending we're not talking about trades at this point either, which could really throw things out of whack.
I honestly think it's very possible that Wilson goes three. You know, the Grizzlies, okay. I think a lot of people have made this point. They love athleticism and defense, and he's the best player of the top four if that's what you like. And if that was the case, then Boozer would fall to four where his father played. His father, of course, was Carlos Boozer, 2-time All-Star, played for the Bulls. So that would be kind of cool. But I definitely would not discount some of the other guards. And, you know, I could list a bunch of them because there's really little separating them. But to pick one, I would say Darius Acuff. I think he could definitely go top five because, you know, once Peterson's shooting numbers dropped off in the second half of the season, Acuff just really surged to the end of the year and has a case as the best shooter in the draft. I mean, I think he shot like 44% from three, did it off the catch, off the dribble with a lot of focus from the defense. And, you know, John Calipari doesn't bat 1,000 in the draft, but he's put a lot of star guards into the NBA. And Acuff next. You know, you kind of got to retrain your brain and remember that Calipari doesn't coach in Kentucky anymore. It's at Arkansas. So if he recruits a guy and he's a guard and he's got skills like this, more often than not, that player turns into a really, really good NBA guard.
Is there anybody that you look at in this draft that you feel like could start to jump up draft boards and start to get a little more hype as we get closer?
Yeah, I mean, I'll give you two names. One that, you know, would be perhaps a big rise. That's Tunde Yusufu of Baylor. He's like fringe first and second round, but I don't buy it. I think he's going to go around the top 20. We'll see how many of these guys stay in the draft, by the way. There's a lot of uncertainty in that range. But he was a McDonald's All-American, one of the best athletes in the draft. People were comparing him to Anthony Edwards after the McDonald's All-American game because he was one of the more exciting players on the court. Really good defender, and there's questions about his offense, but he scored at Baylor. So I think there's a really high ceiling there, and he's got a great motor. And then another guy I would say is Kingston Flemings of Houston. Mm-hmm. He's a lock in the top 10, but I could see him moving up a few spots from where he's currently projected, which I think is the back end of the top 10, because he had a great combine. He shot the ball really well. He measured out a little bit taller than I thought he would at about 6'3 without shoes, 6'2.5 without shoes. And his first step was confirmed at the combine as being pretty special. Like, he is extremely fast. He plays defense very strong, kind of like a Cason Wallace. He said he models his defensive game after him. And you could just tell talking to him that he's going to interview well. He's very enthusiastic, very well-spoken, very humble. And so I've been enjoying watching him all year. I love physical defensive guards who can shoot and who have passing feel, and he checks off all those boxes.
What do you think the chances are we see a star moved before or during the drafts, like a Giannis, for example?
I think the chances are pretty good. At least with Giannis, it sounds like there's momentum there, right? We saw the report from ESPN. I really am just fascinated at how this offseason is going to go once the lottery odds are enacted, assuming they are. We've all seen the proposal. We've all weighed in on what we think about it. But what we don't know and what I personally foresee is a ton of domino effects in terms of trade value and also how teams operate this offseason. If you have no incentive to strip your team down to the studs to rebuild anymore, then that's going to change how teams go about the offseason and the types of players that they're interested in. Then first-round picks could take on a completely different level of value now that it's all you need to essentially do is be in the 16-team lottery and you have a lottery ticket that could cash in with the number one overall pick. So how is that going to affect everything? It's going to be fascinating to watch. I think it's going to be a lot more profound in terms of what it changes than people are giving it credit for.
Yeah, we could have a wild NBA offseason. Chase Hughes, good to talk to you again, buddy. Thanks for coming on.
Absolutely, man. Let's do it again.
Yeah, I mean, it's like, you know, you know how the NBA goes, right? It's kind of cyclical, and I feel like it's been way too quiet for way too long, and I feel like this offseason just has this, again, it's harder in free agency to build a team now. We know that the draft lottery is going to certainly be different moving forward, but, man, you got some stars' names getting thrown around now, and, you know, we'll see what happens in some of these playoff series, too, or there are more changes there. I mean, there's a lot to certainly work with here that could cause a lot of movement around the draft, especially if a team decides, you know, I'd rather get another first-round pick here and go younger. I mean, we've seen it before. You saw it in the NFL. You watched the Giants just do that. I mean, who knows if you'll see a team go that direction, too. The Bucks could be in that spot. You got the 10th pick, and then you go another direction and get another earlier pick, and you move Giannis. So, all right, we'll see. We just had the NFL draft, and it's like now we get into the most hyped NBA draft for the next, you know, month plus or whatever that we get to lead up to that. I'm Nick Ashew. Nick Ashew on the Fan. I just keep thinking more and more about this potential for the Wizards. If the Jazz are really willing to trade up, oh my God, you have to do this. Unless you're dead set on AJ DeBonta, you have to do this. And again, there's so many rumors out there. I mean, it's just... It's lying season. You know, and the Wizards are smart. I want to see lots of interviews with Michael Winger and Will Dawkins and whoever else. I don't care, anybody. And I want every single thing to be like, well, we're evaluating. Yep, well, maybe we'll think about a trade. Yeah, maybe we'll I mean, everybody should seem available on the Wizards roster, and every single option should be on the table for that number one pick. It doesn't mean you're actually considering all of those things. You just want everybody around the NBA to keep guessing, because then you're opening things up for all kinds of possibilities. Now, I'm not saying you're going to get a draft day scenario like the movie Draft Day, but what I am saying is, if there's any truth whatsoever, to the Jazz wanting to trade up, and you really could get Ace Bailey and the number two pick, which means Darren Peterson, and a future first, I'd even make the trade if you didn't even involve another future first. Seriously. I would do it without that if I'm the Wizards. Or like a conditional first down the road or something. Ace Bailey, last year's draft was not at the level of this year's draft in terms of talent and the hype and all that. But last year's draft, Dylan Harper, Ace Bailey, Cooper Flagg, I mean, those are the three names that people looked at and said they are massively talented and have a chance to be NBA All-Stars, perennial All-Stars. Ace Bailey's been forgotten about because he's playing out in Salt Lake City and the Jazz weren't on national TV, and the biggest story about them all year was they got fined at the end of the year for tanking. Ace Bailey's really good, and Ace Bailey wanted to play in Washington. He wanted to drop past the Jazz at 6 to 7 to the Wizards. Now, they got Trey Johnson. Love Trey Johnson. I think this kid can be phenomenal. The Ray Allen comparison's a little dangerous, but I'm always weary about like any comparison on a kid that's like 19, 20 years old. It's like, okay, hold on. Darren Peterson's getting compared to Kobe Bryant, but you can see some of the similarities there. But if the Wizards can end up adding two potential perennial All-Stars and not even add another first-round pick, okay. You do that in a second. I mean, you don't even hesitate. But that's why I just don't think that that's going to happen. I don't think that's actually on the table. But if the Jazz really want Bonta that much, this is the type of thing that you're going to have to consider if you're Utah. You got to give up a premium. And look, on top of that too, the Wizards are in the position of leverage. Because if you're the Wizards, you don't have to move off that spot. You can pick whoever you want. If the Jazz truly want Bonta that much and think he's a bigger part of their future, and he wants to be there and stay in Utah and it's a perfect match, there's also maybe the potential for pressure for the Jazz and Danny Ainge to move up and just like, look, you got to do it. Go get Bonta. We want to stay here. Like, his team is going to Danny Ainge and telling him, you got to make this trade. You got to make this happen. That's the move right there. It's the outside pressure. It's the outside pressure that would really help make this trade happen. And it could end up being, I'm telling you, this could be a franchise-altering moment for the Wizards if that trade were to actually happen. The amount of young talent the Wizards would have and have for the foreseeable future. Because remember, I mean, Ace Bailey played one season. That's it. Oh my gosh. It's why I don't believe it. Danny Ainge is the guy that traded down when the Celtics had the number one overall pick and didn't need it. It wasn't even their pick. And he traded down to get Jason Tatum. And then the Sixers took Markelle Fultz number one. Like, Danny Ainge is smart. It's why I just don't believe that this is actually going to be the case. But I'll sit and I'll pray and I'll hope. But I think that the optics of that would look really, really bad and really, really desperate if you're the Jazz, but maybe not. I mean, maybe it's just a miracle and the basketball gods come the Wizards' way. But I'm seeing this like all over the place. But you don't know what to believe at this point. And this is how all of this stuff is. Like, it gets to a point where you just have to kind of sift through the noise and figure out what the truth actually is. And look, both these kids can play, man. And now that we have a little more clarity on Darren Peterson and the cramping and all that, because that was really it all of last year. We knew at some point it was going to come out. You could not leave that unanswered before the draft. So the fact that we got that, right before the draft lottery, and yeah, I mean, it's kind of what you'd expect. You'd expect to hear about it. You'd expect to have that brought up so you can get some sort of clarity, and then the medical teams will check them out, and you go through that whole process, and then everybody's a little more comfortable. But look, I mean, Darren Peterson's got a lot of upside, man. A lot of upside. Better shooter than A.J. Dabonsa, though keep in mind, Dabonsa was seeing a lot of double teams last year. Both are really athletic. Peterson's probably the better defender. Dabonsa's got more of an NBA-ready body. Darren Peterson's a little skinnier. I mean, he's like, 6'6", 195. But you can pack on muscle. And you don't have to be – that's the thing, too. Like, if you're a big in the NBA and you're going to need that strength and you're playing in the post like an old school big, yeah, that matters. But nowadays, the NBA is not, they don't play that way anymore. You don't have to be somebody that's big and bulky and strong. No, you need to be quick, you need to be athletic, and you need to be able to play defense. The NBA is evolving. I'm telling you now, the NBA is going back towards prioritizing players that also defend. There's a reason why nobody wanted Trae Young when he got traded. The Wizards took him because it was a sell low or a buy low situation, and nobody wanted to trade for him, and they were going to move those guys anyway. Players that can play defense, and you're going to see a better defensive player from Darren Peterson than DeBonta. DeBonta has it there. Some people are comparing him to Jaylen Brown. I don't know if I see that. Jaylen Brown's a better defender than A.J. DeBonta, but I do know that there is certainly, again, there's potential there. Both these guys have the opportunity to be number one overall picks, and both are worthy of the number one overall pick. It's really just where you think the upside is. And yeah, if you're the Wizards, who cares? Like, don't make it about who fits your roster more. Who cares? This roster is not going to look this way in a year anyway. You're going to move some guys, whether it's Anthony Davis or it's Trae Young or it's, I don't know, when any of these, I mean, Bilal Coulibaly, does he get moved? I mean, again, you could throw out any name. They're not going to keep every young player they've got on this roster, but they've got, that's why you just, you stock up and you collect as many talented players as you can. You look for the upside. You see who works through the competition, rises to the top, and that's kind of how you're building out the culture. That's how you're building out the core. That's how you get this team to a point where everybody's kind of on the same page. I wouldn't keep Anthony Davis or Trae Young if you make that trade with the Ace Bailey. If you get Ace Bailey and you get Darren Peterson, you keep Trae Young for a year or you keep him until the deadline and you move him. Because he's going to be a free agent anyway. He's going to pick up his option. It's going to be in the last year of his deal. You give Darren Peterson a chance to come along and not instantly get out there and run the point as a rookie. Although, I mean, he probably could do it. That's what he did. Like, he didn't play point guard much at Kansas. He did it in high school. And I get it, high school to the NBA, big difference. But Darren Peterson has the ability to be a guy that kind of runs the point for you. So, you got a lot of guards. Okay, maybe you move a couple of guys then and fill another position of need. And you add Ace Bailey. I mean, I'd be salivating this, almost as salivating as much as I was talking about wings with Metal Chris earlier. What did you say that you still need? There was another ridiculous food item that you, or a food combination that you have. We've got 2 minutes. I need to hear this.
I'm a big fan of the tahine or tagine. I think it's pronounced tahine. It's got a J in there.
Yeah, tahine, the spice or whatever.
Yeah, it's like a powder kind of spice.
Yeah, use it for like spicy margaritas around the rims.
Sure. Yeah. But I mean, you can use it on a lot of stuff.
Sure.
But I love it on a banana.
On a banana?
Yes.
Okay.
Spicy banana is delicious.
Spicy banana.
Not spicy, like super hot, but it's like flavorful, yeah, you know? It's like, yeah, it's really good. I don't know why, but that combo it works, man.
I might have to try it because we have both in the house. I might have to try this.
Yeah, try one, man. You'll never go back.
Oh, you'll never go back again. So let me ask you this. Is this something that somebody told you about or you discovered it on your own?
I don't know. Maybe. I've been doing it for a while now. I don't remember. Yeah.
Will you eat a banana without it on it?
Yeah, sure. Okay. I mean, whatever. I like bananas anyway. Like, I like desserts with bananas a lot, like bananas Foster and things like that.
Yeah.
But, so, yeah, sure. Chunky Monkey is my favorite Ben & Jerry's.
Bananas like love or hate with people. People either love it or they have. Now, can you eat banana flavored like candy or banana flavored anything?
That's not like when it's like artificial. It's not really the same.
Yeah. That's where I am too. It's just not. I like bananas. I mean, they're good.
It's like how grape always tastes like purple. It doesn't taste like grape.
It tastes like purple.
Yeah,
it's true. It is true. What is it about that? It makes it like we associate it with the taste of purple, but it's really just it's a grape, but it's a grape flavor that tastes purple and purple.
I don't know. It's just all the candy companies decided that was grape, and it tastes nothing like grape.
I feel like this is a conversation we should have after a couple of gummies. Like, dude, have you noticed it tastes like purple, man? Just saying. But you're right. You get it. So, all right, I'm going to try this. Sprinkle a little tahine on a banana and see if that actually works.
Yeah, man, you got to try it.
Yeah, all right. I could do this. I could try it. So we'll see. All right, well, we're back tomorrow. You're back tomorrow with me, aren't you?
Yeah, I'm back on with you tomorrow.
Let's go.
All right.
We got no NBA tonight. This is sad. I'll go out and touch grass. That's the key.
That's all those series ended early, so.
I know. That's the problem. Is like we got a game 7 tomorrow night, which is great. The Western Conference Finals start Monday. Can't wait for that. Thunder and Spurs, but it's going to be, you know, we're sitting there and we look ahead and we wait. We wait now because you had the Knicks sweeping the Sixers and now I don't think the Cavs are winning game 7. I don't think they're winning on the road. I don't trust them. I think it's Pistons-Knicks Eastern Conference Finals, which is a great matchup. And then you're going to have Spurs Thunder, Western Conference Finals, future, I mean, just dominant rivalry in the NBA moving forward. It's a gift. I think it's a gift, and it looks like, too, OG Anunoby, hamstring update, trying to improve day by day, so we don't know. So we don't know when OG Anunoby is going to be ready for the Knicks, but that would be key. They've had a lot of time to rest him, and if you can get him back early in that series, if not game one, but don't rush him back. We've seen what's happened with that before. If you're in the Knicks, don't rush him back, but you get him against the Pistons, that they're going to need him. That's for sure. Pistons gave the Knicks trouble during the regular season, at least. All right, Nats baseball coming up next. We're back tomorrow morning, 10 a.m., right here on The Fan.